You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
My guest tonight, she's the editor-in-chief of The Economist. Please welcome to the program, Zanny Minton-Beddoes. Please. I hope you're all right.
I'm all right.
When I was here nine years ago, we almost killed Jimmy Carter with the rolling chairs. He almost went all the way back.
No, it swivels this way.
It does swivel. We have The Economist. This is your magazine. We have it. We brought it with us. I don't know if you can see that there. We're out there. And it's got a post-it note in there for...
What? The right page
I have
you need
no
to look
idea
at.
Why there's a post-it note in there. I thought there was a centerfold. It wasn't there. I don't know what was that. Welcome to the show, though. We very much appreciate it. I wanted to ask you, you know, The Economist wrote about some of Joe Biden's issues a year ago. You wrote, is he going to be up for the job in the second term? What were the concerns that you guys had then?
So we wrote after the midterms that he should not stand for a second term. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he came in, he was hoping to be, he said pretty much that he wanted to be a one-term president. He was a grown-up. He would save the country from Donald Trump.
He was the bridge candidate.
He was the bridge candidate.
He didn't say which bridge. Wasn't the Williamsburg Bridge. It's one of those bridges in Florida that go 30 miles.
Absolutely. And I think we, after the midterms, we thought that it was time for him to kind of make that clear. He would have been, had he said he was going to be a one-term president, he would have been a remarkable one-term president. He's achieved an unbelievable amount for one term. But now we are where we are here, and huge majorities of the American people, including huge majorities of Democrats, think he is too old for a second term. It's really alarming that the only person between us and the return of Donald Trump is a frail 81-year-old.
You said that like Voldemort. You said the return. The return of Donald Trump.
It really worries me. And it may be a little weird, but for those of us outside the U.S.,
well, couldn't they say, though, if you say I had a remarkable first term, what's to say I won't have a remarkable second term?
He's 81 years old.
What?
You know, he is the same age pretty much as my father. I love my father dearly. My father's a wonderful man, but my father should be nowhere near the most important job in the world. He probably never should have been. But 81-year-olds...
He doesn't watch this thing, does he? Does he watch comedy?
This may be a little explanation we'll
sure,
have to go
understood.
On later. But an 81-year-old, you know what they're like at 81. You know what they're going to be like at 85. You know, time travels one way and people go in one direction at that age.
Why are you looking at me like that when you say that? That seemed awfully personal.
No, as you said at the beginning of the show, you're a good 20 years younger. You know, you've got a long time still.
It's pretty interesting. But let me ask you, so there is obviously a press pool. There's a White House press corps. There's a certain amount of mystery that seems to surround this. All the people behind the scenes are saying, you don't know like we know. He's leading these meetings. He's unbelievable. I wish you could see it. But certainly, there are press people that travel with the president. Surely, I have not seen people come out with firsthand accounts. They have not come out and said...
Him bounding along Air Force One.
Right, or just said, I follow the president, I'm with him every day, he is unbelievably sharp, he's just camera shy. Or whatever it is, but nobody is making those. It makes it seem conspiratorial.
And I think what is clear is that it is quite hard to get access to this president. He is very carefully shepherded around. He doesn't do very many press conferences. He doesn't do very many interviews. I assume that's for a reason. And I hear the same thing. You know, he's very sharp. He talks for a long time. He can outlast anybody in a meeting. I'm perfectly prepared to believe that on some subjects that's true. Joe Biden knows a huge amount about foreign policy. He is exactly the right person to have in the Oval Office in the world as it is we have today. And I'm sure on certain things he can go for hours and hours and hours. He can probably be in negotiations for a long time. But does that mean he should be president for another two terms? I think it's worrying.
Now, when you say...
Not one term, yeah.
The world order is changing. And there is a part, you know, The Economist is certainly, you know, it does represent a certain mainstream point of view or establishment.
Well, actually, interestingly, we stand for good classic English liberalism. It's not the same as an American liberal, which is more of a lefty, but the English liberalism...
Am I going to get tested on this? Because I don't...
I'm going to start with a little lesson here. But no, we believe in individual freedom, free markets, limited government. We've kind of believed in that for a long time. And for a long time, you're right, our view was the kind of mainstream view. You know, Reaganism, Thatcherism, even Clintonism, you know, wasn't too far apart. That was the mainstream view. But now we're absolutely not the mainstream view. Now, you know...
I should have said establishment. I think it's more
establishment.
The status quo.
Well, we're absolutely not the establishment view. Now industrial policy is in, big state is in, protectionism is in, all manner of things that we traditionally didn't believe in. And so our kind of liberalism, I think, is very much not the mainstream view now. And we're championing liberalism in the face, actually, of pretty concerted resistance to it and people going in different directions. So the whole kind of Trumpist assault, if you will. In fact, this week's cover is going to be about this, almost certainly, unless something dramatic happens, which is about national conservatism. This idea which, you know, the MAGA Republicans have, but also a bunch of conservatives in Europe, you know, Viktor Orban, Giorgia Meloni in Italy, Marine Le Pen in France, there are differences between them, but they're united by an idea that they want to be anti-globalist, they're anti-trade, they're very skeptical of migration, they want to push back against what they see as progressive woke ideology.
Would you say this is perhaps a new world order that they are promoting?
They would love that.
Oh, no, they're the ones who always talk about how there's a conspiracy to create a new world order, when if you really look at it, they're the ones trying to create it. They're shifting. There was an old paradigm, right, which was America post-war aligned itself with liberal Europe against communism. That was the stability of the world since World War II was capitalism versus communism. It looks like there appears to be a realignment along the lines of not capitalism and communism, but woke and unwoke. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it is what ties Putin to Trump and Orban to Trump. If you listen to Putin, when he talks about Orthodox Christianity and Western society and anti-gay rhetoric, he sounds like a AM radio host.
Absolutely. And there are people in the Republican Party now who warm more to Putin than to Ukraine, for example. So I think you're right.
Well, I think all of them.
No, not all of them. Not all of
them. Well, Mitch McConnell, but he just stops working every now and again.
I think there's a really serious point. There's a complete... You know, one way of thinking about it is a MAGA takeover of the Republican Party. But another, I think there's something more profound going on, which is there is potentially a kind of revolution in conservatism, which may end up being as big as the kind of Thatcherite, Reaganite revolution, which is taking it in a completely different direction.
No, it's not a populism and a nativism, but it's combined with this anti-wokeism that almost seems to be the more powerful unifying theory. Than it is. It used to be economic theories, and now it's theories of social culture issues.
Identity, social culture.
That's right.
Absolutely. No, I think that's definitely a fault line, and the people you cite are definitely on one side of it. Whether it's a new world order yet, I don't know.
We did not talk about NATO. Donald Trump very famously came out and said, I would encourage Russia, this was years ago, to attack them so that they would pay their bills, as though the value of NATO is in what they can contribute financially. What is your thought on that?
He sounded like the mobster, right? They got to pay.
That's right.
Donald Trump doesn't, I think, understand what collective security is about. Like, the NATO is basically, if you attack the smallest NATO country, you're attacking America. That basic deal was understood by the Soviet Union and then by Russia. That's why we haven't had an attack on NATO. I think that is undermined by him basically saying it's a protectionist racket, which is what he... So I don't think Donald Trump cares about alliances, but the reason it's so disconcerting and worrying if you're in Europe right now is this is happening at a time when Vladimir Putin has already done a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. He is rearming much faster than Europe. Europe is a fundamentally more dangerous place. So even with Donald Trump nowhere near the White House yet, him saying it right now is destabilizing. It makes it much more likely that Putin, an aggressive dictator, you know, it pushes further. And at the same time, you have this aid for Ukraine held up here in this country. And to be clear, aiding Ukraine, giving the money to Ukraine, is the cheapest possible way for the U.S. to enhance its security. It's just, it's absolutely, the fighting is being done by the Ukrainians. They're the people who are being killed. The U.S. and Europe are supplying them weapons. And in doing so, we are pushing back against Putin. I mean, I've been to Kyiv twice, right, and lived there 30 years ago. And you can't go there and not think this is a European country that is looking westward. And for the U.S. to abandon it now, if it does, it's almost jaw-dropping.
The unfortunate part for Ukraine seems to be that it also holds a place in our culture war. Yeah. I don't think there's any principled opposition from the right in terms of sending arms. There might be in terms of the amount or the money or some of those things. I think they're really caught in the idea that Putin and Orban and that illiberal order are their natural allies. And so Ukraine, they have to paint that as Nazified or utterly corrupt, as though Russia is somehow fundamentally, just this unbelievable Valhalla. But I think that's why Ukraine, if Russia had done
there
somewhere else, Ukraine happens to hold a very strange place in this whole Burisma, Hunter Biden, illiberal, like.
Exactly. Donald Trump doesn't like Volodymyr Zelensky because of the whole issue around the first impeachment and Burisma,
right,
and all of that stuff.
That's
so,
right.
He holds grudges, and he doesn't like Zelensky, and he likes Putin because Putin's tough.
That's right.
That kind of thing. Then I think there are a bunch of Republicans who are genuine, what you might call old-fashioned isolationists, who just don't think the kind of U.S. should be involved in this
Right.
Then there's a bunch who have perfectly reasonable concerns about whether the money is being well spent. Corruption in Ukraine. There is plenty of corruption in Ukraine, whether it's all well spent. And then I think you're right. There are these, and let's call them the Tucker Carlson Republicans, who kind of have a sense that there is somehow the Putin is the hero and Ukraine is the villain, which is sort of hard to get your head around, but that does seem to be what they think.
Right. And that's, I do think that's the world order that they would be pushing towards. But this gets back to journalism. In this country, it's all about the money, and there's very little talk about, even after September 11th, when Article 5 was invoked and they came to our defense.
Yeah, the Article 5 has been invoked
was for us
to the defense of the United States.
And yet, it really does boil down to, oh, is this just a financial transaction gone awry, or is this the valuable alliance that's kind of held together the world order? And which, by the way, though, we have to be able to criticize what it did in Iraq and all these other things. But if we can't talk honestly about it, we end up shutting down all the conversation.
Of course. I think there is discussion about it. I mean, NATO, most of the time, for most Americans, is not something that's probably top of mind. But I think there is a kind of reasonable...
I have not been to a party where it's not the first thing people talk about. When
you clearly move in serious circles.
I do. Generally, it's you go in, it's a little NATO talk, and then a keg stand. Thank you very much for being here. It's really fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Vanity Vincent Meadows of The Economist. Take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
My guest tonight, oh, I love them so much. They're law professors and constitutional experts. Elitist, who co-hosts a podcast about the Supreme Court called Strict Scrutiny. Please welcome to the program Melissa Murray and Kate Shaw, please. Hey, guys. Now, let me first, I want to apologize. So you have a third, Leah Littman, who couldn't be here because of the delicate configurations of our desk. We would have loved to have Leah be here as well, but she's in California, and so I didn't want to let that pass. I want to start with you guys a simple question. John Oliver has offered Clarence Thomas a Winnebago and $1 million a year to, and this is his words, not mine, get the f*** off the Supreme Court. Will, in your court watchers, your experts on the Supreme Court, will he accept this offer?
I think this is a Harlan Crowe counteroffer opportunity.
You believe that his benefactor is going to have to counter, but what do you counter with? It's a beautiful Winnebago and $1 million a year. Is there anything else to life?
Not if you enjoy spending time in the parking lots of Walmart, as Justice Thomas suggests.
He says he does, but apparently he likes to quail hunt in a robe. I want to ask you, there's a strategy that's starting to bubble up, which is getting Americans comfortable with authoritarianism and getting us to not think critically about the differences between a free society and not a free society. And in that regard, they are starting to paint Trump as Navalny. That the trials that he is facing in America are similar or the same to as what Putin did to Navalny. Please explain to me why that's horseshit.
Well, we are not experts in Russian criminal procedure, but I think it's safe to say that Donald Trump is likely receiving more procedural protections right now in the 4 criminal indictments that he is currently subject to than Alexei Navalny had in his time in Russia. So I think this is not the same situation.
Would you say that Donald Trump has actually received due process than most people in America? I mean, this guy is clearly on the platinum due process plan. Like
the Harlan Crowe due process
the Harlan Crowe due process. Like he's getting every...
The doest of processes.
The doest of processes.
Yes.
So how is this even comparable?
It's not at all comparable. And I do think it is interesting, as your last segment made clear, that Trump is adverting to the situation in Russia right now and invoking Navalny. And I think that it's right to draw comparisons right now, but of course, the casting is all wrong. Right now, in the arguments that Trump is making in some of the pending criminal cases against him, he is essentially casting himself as above and beyond the law. And you know, we're essentially seeing what
a head of state. Presidents should have complete and total immunity, because if you can't kill people, then what fun?
Well, this was actually a hypothetical that came up in the lower federal court argument in this immunity case. Trump's lawyer was asked, so you're saying that a president could order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival and the criminal law couldn't get him for that?
Sounds familiar.
It does.
And Trump's lawyer basically said, unless he's been impeached and convicted first, the criminal laws can't
By the
touch
Senate
him.
In a political process.
Right, so you have to go
so
through
our criminal
that.
Laws are suspended for
that's,
the president.
That's a
Didn't we fight
saying.
A war about that?
Well, we not only fought a war, but our whole constitutional structure is designed to prevent consolidations of power within the presidency.
Checks and balances.
Exactly. And so this whole idea...
You get an A in our constitutional law classes, John.
A plus in con law. But I mean, what Kate is describing is essentially very authoritarian forward. I mean, the person that Donald Trump is not Alexei Navalny. It's Vladimir Putin.
Right. That's who he wants to be. That's who he admires. But in our judicial system's defense, in my mind, over these past few years, it was one of the few institutions in America that actually held pretty strong. And you are frowning at me. You disagree with this.
So, well, on our podcast, we take different roles. Kate is, I think, much more amenable to your position. I think...
Hold on one second.
Okay,
I'm going to talk to Kate.
Yeah. Explain. Like, there's something to this.
I do think that there is a way in which courts really did stand as a bulwark against some of Trump's worst instincts and impulses while he was in office, and even since, you know, 60-plus lawsuits he filed around the 2020 election, all unsuccessful.
Right.
He argued for different versions of immunity in civil and criminal cases previously. Those have been unsuccessful essentially throughout. But we are in a real test moment of that proposition, in that the Supreme Court is right now facing this question of whether he will ever stand trial for the January 6th events.
But if they grant him blanket immunity, we don't have a republic anymore. We don't have a constitutional republic. If the head of it has immunity, the thing I liked about what the courts did is they set a standard of evidence. Anybody can say whatever they want on a basic cable show, wherever they go, or at a rally or anything else. But when you bring it into a court, as Giuliani famously said, no, we don't have any evidence, but we got lots of theories, and they threw him out.
Okay, so... That just suggests that the bar is in hell, right? So, yes, of course, the courts are a bulwark against the most totalitarian impulses in our society, but we forget that the court system we have, the Supreme Court we have, the debates we're having about the Supreme Court are all right now the product of what Donald Trump did. Like, this is a person who was not elected by the popular vote.
You're saying
vote.
These questions would have been utterly unimaginable in previous
times. We are right now debating whether or not in the next presidential term we are going to see a national ban on abortion. We wouldn't be having that discussion if Donald Trump's 6-3 conservative supermajority had not rolled back Roe versus Wade. We wouldn't have that discussion at all.
Right.
So
or the immunity discussion or anything
else. All of this. He has created the conditions for the way we talk about this court.
And that's the thing that ultimately is at stake in all this. I want to thank you guys so much for coming on. You're fabulous. Check out their podcast, please. Strict Scrutiny. New episodes drop on Mondays. It's a fine day to drop them. Melissa Murray and Kate Shaw.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.